Welcome to the Community Action League. The Community Action League is a weekly show that is a collaborative effort of local organizations and nonprofits. Our goal is to raise awareness of issues that impact people of Gallatin County, like consent, housing, transportation, human rights, and addiction. We also discuss the organizations that our listeners can engage with that are relevant to those topics. On our show, we discuss the intersectionality or connections between these topics at the local, national, and global levels. If you are interested, you can tune in to KGVM 95.9 Bozeman to learn about the issues impacting your community every Thursday at 7 p.m. Do you have a topic that you would like to hear about or comments on our show? Contact us at communityactionleague@gmail.com to request a topic or share your thoughts. Today, I'm joined here with some very nice people, hopefully. And we will be talking about gender, because gender is a thing. And the first thing that I'm hoping we can do is we can introduce ourselves and what brought us to this conversation.
And as much as I'd love to go first, I'm going to hand it back to you, because I don't want you to forget to introduce yourself, yeah. Perrin.
So, my name is Perrin, and I use the gender pronouns they, them, which will be a part of the discussion we have later. And I work for the Help Center in Bozeman, which offers 24-hour crisis hotline services, as well as counseling services. I provide those counseling services primarily through the Sexual Assault Counseling Center and the Child Advocacy Center.
And I'm Cami Armijo Grover. I work for Bridger Care, and I am our sex educator here. So I get the pleasure of teaching to schools and community groups and kids of all ages about issues like sexually transmitted infections and puberty and contraception. And we do get to talk about gender to many different age groups. And I guess for me, it's kind of an important thing to discuss because I know that kids as young as 2 or 3 are starting to explore their gender, and I have a 2.5-year-old, so she's fitting right in there. But aside from that as well, by kindergarten, we've done discussions about gender with kids, and they will tell you that a football is a boy toy and a doll is a girl toy. And I know that these gender norms are kind of put on people very young in life, and so just think it's something that people should be aware exists.
Hello. I'm Alexina Lockie. So I'm a part of two groups which are relevant to this. I'm a part of PRED, which is a collaborative group thing between Haven and Bridger Care. And it's a group of, I think it's 16 this year? Yeah, 16 teenagers who are taught extensively about sexual and reproductive health and healthy relationships, and then we go out and teach to the community. So I'm also an officer of SAGA, which stands for Sexuality and Gender Alliance, and that is a group up at the high school. So yeah.
Hi, I'm Coley Clements. I am the president of the Queer Straight Alliance on Montana State Campus. Queer Straight Alliance is a student and community group that focuses on building a safe and fun and just positive community for queer students and as well as Bozeman community members. And so we do weekly meetings and big events throughout the year to foster that environment.
And everyone totally forgot to do their pronouns. Yeah. I wasn't going to say anything.
So this is Cami with Bridger Care, and my pronouns are she and her, and often when I go out and teach, my pronouns are on my name tag, so I don't even think to do it, but it is definitely something that a person, you know, should do, because it kind of sets a respectful tone for understanding that not everybody may have the same pronouns, or that you can necessarily assume their pronouns based on how they look.
I'm Alexina, and I use she, her pronouns.
Coley here, and I use she, her pronouns.
So back into this discussion of gender, who feels like they can jump in and define, or at least start this discussion of what gender is?
I can.
Thank you, Alexina.
So in general, gender is based off of two groups, male and female, but that's actually sex, so it's not gender. But that creates two separate genders, which people oftentimes identify with, but then there are also things in the middle, so it's like a spectrum. So. Yeah, it's confusing.
Well, and I've heard it described as the insistent, persistent, and consistent knowledge of who a person is. And I guess it's hard to talk about gender without talking about some of what we see with gender. So, for example, someone who wears skirts might be showing the feminine side of them, and so they might identify as female, for example, and they may not too. But gender is often tied to the way that we dress, the way that we act, the way that we sit, our mannerisms, I guess I should say.
So Kimmy, you mean something like gender expression, so yeah, a person uses clothing or makeup or the way that they style their hair, that would be the way that they're expressing their gender identity, so the way that they think, feel, and perceive themselves. Would that...
Yes, but much more eloquently than I put it. So I think on the... Let's take one step back. Let's talk about sex assigned at birth, because that is what people often think of when they think of gender, right? Correct. When I was pregnant... Well, my daughter's 2.5, so when I was pregnant 3 years ago, they were doing an ultrasound, and they saw a little vulva, and they said, oh my gosh, it's a girl. And they automatically just assumed, based on her outer genitals, that she was going to identify as a girl. So a person's genitals and the chromosomes and hormones that are inside of their body is what sex assigned at birth is. And that is has nothing to do with gender. Gender can be a whole different set of things. A person born with a penis might identify as a woman, for example, and a person born with a vulva and a uterus and all that stuff may identify as male at some point in time, or something in between, or neither. So it's one of those things that sex assigned at birth, we often think that's just kind of like, I mean, especially now we do the gender reveal parties, right? We've all seen those on social media that people want to come out with pink balloons and blue balloons because clearly their child must identify that way.
Sex is more related to genitalia than it is related to how a person identifies or views or sees themselves. That's gender.
And even there, when just talking about sex, there's already a break from a binary because... We do tend to think of things as in male and female, but there's a huge spectrum of people who are not necessarily exactly male or exactly female. And obviously the word exactly doesn't exactly sum it up. Oh my God, I need to stop. No.
So there's an entire group of people who identify as intersex, and that doesn't fall in male or female sex. You could have external, physically, more than one part, or internally your hormones could be different, your chromosomes could be different, and based on that, gender comes more from how you would personally express how you were born or how you feel inside. So to me, gender seems more as how someone personally identifies and feels in their core of who they are, and then gender expression would be how they represent themselves in a public and society setting to express so other people know how they are feeling inside.
So I'm wondering, kind of with this discussion about how gender can be on a spectrum and how even the idea of the binary sex organs are also on the spectrum with intersex, if we could kind of discuss what to bring it more to ourselves. What experiences have we had when we think about gender? So maybe thinking about a time that you first maybe became aware that gender was a thing, or kind of how you experience your gender identity in the world.
So growing up, I had a bunch of cousins. All of them identified as boys. And I have a really clear memory. I must have been in early elementary school, where we decided to play dress up in my house. And in our whole extended family, the only girls were in my house. So we had a big box of dresses and purses and heels, and the boys didn't care. And we all dressed up and just played, and we have an adorable picture of all of us in our little dresses. And I remember feeling so proud that my cousins didn't care, and they didn't care if they felt goofy, that gender is just something fun and you can make it your own and express it in any way that you want, and it isn't something that always has to be taken so seriously. And now with how involved I am with drag, I think maybe it's because of that initial gender experience. But I know from hearing experiences of others that the gender roles that are learned at a pretty young age don't always have such a positive effect. They can have more of a traumatic experience on how open and comfortable they feel with expressing the gender that is pertaining to them on the inside.
Well, this is Cammie with Bridger Care, but I feel like I have a lot of privilege with the fact that I identify as cisgender, which, if you don't know what that means, cisgender is a person who, in my case, was born with a uterus and identifies as a woman. And so for me, I never really had to think about gender too much. I mean, of course, as a woman, I do still think about it in many ways of like, you know, I remember in college, I was studying economics and my partner, who's male, studied psychology, and he said, almost all my classmates are female and almost all of yours are male. And I said, I don't remember what we were talking about, but I said, well, I've always loved math. And his reply was, well, you must not have ever heard from the psychology standpoint of things that girls aren't good at math. And there's just so many things that do affect us, even those of us that identify as cisgender, the stereotypes and things that exist about how we should act and what we should be good at and what we should like. But I've still had so much privilege compared to somebody who's like, I always wanted to wear a dress, but I'm not allowed to because that's not, or wasn't allowed to as a child because that's not something that my family saw as appropriate.
So for me, I don't have specific memories about gender. I mean, I'm sure I do. I can't remember them at the moment. I do remember that the people that I grew up with, there was a clear-ish gender divide. It wasn't something where it was like, no, boys can't play here, girls can't play here. It was just kind of more of like a self-identified group thing. Like, you just kind of hung out with girls if you were a girl or boys if you were a boy. And there wasn't much intermixing. I do remember my brother, when he was younger, he always used to have lots and lots and lots of girls who were friends, not girlfriends. That was just a whole thing at our school. Anyway, he had lots and lots of friends who were girls. And I think that was one of the first times that I was like, oh, look, you can actually be friends with people of the other gender, like, actually closely, just because I'd kind of been isolated. And I did have friends, but they were never close friends. Like, my brother's best friends were all girls. And so that was a really, really interesting experience just for me. And it doesn't mean much now, but it was pretty impactful at, like, six to be like, oh, look. Look at this. This is a thing that happens.
Yeah, and for me, growing up, I can remember a clear gender divide as well, and then feeling uncomfortable, like pushed into one group and then saying like, hey, but, you know, flag football, that could be a thing that I do. Like, why can't that be a thing that I do? And then, you know, noticing, you know, people around me kind of like laughing or giggling, or, you know, if I wanted to do something outside of what the group wanted to do, there was a clear response as to, like, that's not what this group does. And so I have memories of that. But then also, like, you were sharing a memory about everyone dressing up, and I have memories of that as well, of, like, friends who identified as male when we were very young, like, being comfortable, like, oh, playing dress up, let's play dress up, and just being totally into it. And yeah, so it's kind of a mix when it comes to personal experiences. And with that, when you think about how the world perceives your gender, what comes up?
I think, as Coley already mentioned, especially when it comes to like sex assigned at birth, it's not necessarily binary, and I guess Alexine alluded to that as well. It's not just male, female, there's also intersex. And gender, when we talk about our experiences with gender, we're talking about our experiences with boys and girls, and not recognizing that it's not, again, a binary. It's not just those two options, that some people fall somewhere in the middle there, or some folks may not like being considered in any group at all. And I think that's, yeah, I guess I don't know what to say about that, but yes, it's a thing. And it's a thing that people should be allowed to feel and do and be, because I'm often very proud of those people for being strong enough and brave enough to say, you know what, don't put me in a box. I do not belong in that box. I do not feel like I should be in that box, and I am not going to be put in that box.
Yeah, I think that the way that the world identifies you, can have a really strong impact on your personal experience with gender or yourself. And I think that oftentimes it can color someone's own personal identity. So this has more to do with gender expression, but when I was younger, I don't know, I've always kind of just been a fan of really feminine sort of things. But also, I would do this thing when I was younger, which isn't necessarily masculine or feminine, it's just weird. But it would be where I would, before I could write, just like, copy forms, so I would be like not actual writing, but it would just be like scribbles or whatever. So when I got to kindergarten or whatever, that's like all I wanted to do in my free time, and it was like, what a weird thing to do. The girls are all playing house and the boys are all in the corner wrestling. I don't know what the boys did. And then there's just me in the corner writing forms, you know. And so that doesn't really have to do with the way I personally identify my gender, but it does color the way that I experience my gender expression.
I think the world is more aware of how you express your gender as you age, because as a child, I never was questioned if I was wearing boys' clothes or girls' clothes, or I remember one specific Pikachu shirt that I would just never take off, and that wasn't considered weird because I was young and my family was very open to pretty much anything. But then I remember specifically in middle school when I started wearing more makeup and caring more about my appearance and feeling the pressure from other girls in my class to conform to what my gender expression was expected to be. And that's just something that I've noticed other people that comes with age. And then again, the older I got in high school when I started to become more comfortable with myself and realizing I don't have to dress feminine all the time. I was on a dance team, which is extremely female dominated, and everything we wore and did was makeup and glitter and dresses, but I was also on the soccer team, and when I hung out with those girls, it was sweatpants and getting dirty and not caring about anything. So it was a really freeing experience to know that I could do both and I didn't have to put myself into any one box. But personally, I feel like I identify as a woman, but that shouldn't change what I want to do or how I want to dress or who I want to love. It doesn't matter. I'm a woman, and that's all that means. That's as simple as that.
So I think that one of the biggest forms of gender expression tends to be the way that people dress, and it's just going to be the thing that people come back to constantly. But ever since I was young, I just did this thing, where almost in a way to like find myself, I just wear clothes that are vastly different from one another. I still like them, but it's kind of a thing of like, who am I when I'm not just one group of clothing or one group of expressions or whatever? So it's just like a constant shift that I like to experience. And I've found that the way that I wear clothing actually changes the way that, not just that I am perceived by the world, but almost the way that I perceive the world, which I find incredibly interesting. So, for example, for a while I was wearing like hardcore 50s vintage fashion, which usually doesn't go with the word hardcore. But I found myself oftentimes viewing the world in a much more like idealistic sort of way. And I didn't like that, so I changed to start wearing like goth clothing for a little bit, and then I went back and forth, and then I did kind of something in the mix. But I think that it's really interesting just not only to notice the way that the world perceives you, but also the way that you perceive the world based off of who you are.
And I guess there's a lot of intersectionality between a person's multiple identities. So gender is just one piece of who every person is. Other pieces may include things like our race, our religion, our age, the student groups that we belong to or the place that we work and all those kind of things, our sexual orientation, just a variety of things. And they all can be separate from each other, but they all inform each other. And our experiences also kind of contribute to how we view the world and how the world views us. So growing up, I was raised in a very religious household that was pretty traditional. And so girls were expected to all kind of wear long dresses and be very covered up. I was allowed to wear pants once a week, but that was really honestly against our religion. But my parents, I guess, didn't want to be considered tyrants by us kids. So, you know, very, very feminine. We were definitely supposed to have long hair. It was against our religion to wear jewelry and makeup and all that sort of thing, not go to dances and just always be kind of, I guess, very demure and take the more traditional female role of helping around the house and not necessarily, you know, my expectations from a young age of myself, not necessarily that were imposed by my parents, but from myself, from the world I was growing up in, was that I would get married young and have several children and be a stay-at-home mom, which power to those people that can do it, because that is definitely a lot of effort as well. But how the world identifies us can have a profound effect. And as I got older and I no longer was part of that religion, it's been interesting to kind of be able to define myself and be like, I'm going to wear a dress if I want to, but I don't have to hate them. And I can wear pants if I want to, but I don't have to hate them. And I guess for me, again, just coming back to, I feel like I have a lot of privilege because the way I express myself is what people expect from me. And so I never put something on. Oh, that's not true. I was going to say I never put something on that I'm like, ooh, I wonder how I'm going to be received in this. That happens a lot because I have no sense of style, but I'm aware of that. So it's a very different thing from somebody who maybe identifies as transgender or is wearing something that society would not necessarily feel like it would be appropriate for them.
Yeah, and so we're having this discussion kind of about our personal experiences, right, with gender and how the world perceives us. But where do we get these ideas from? Like, where do we get these ideas of gender and how, you know, if a person looks or dresses a certain way, then they must be this gender or must identify this way. So where do those ideas come from?
So those ideas actually come from our society, right? And they can change over time. So definitely I've seen a picture of this beautiful little girl back, you know, 100 years ago. Or, well, it appears to be a beautiful little girl in a nice long white dress with long curly hair and just what we would look at today and be like, what a beautiful girl. And it's Franklin Delano Roosevelt, right? Because back then...
His mom loved putting him in those things, yeah.
Absolutely. And back then that was kind of... how it was expected to be. But then starting back, and I don't remember, I want to say it was like the 30s or the 40s, in the United States at least, commercially, things started to be made different for boys and different for girls, and it was actually just to sell more stuff. Because if you think about it, if a person has, say, 3 children, and they only buy one set of clothes, and then they hand it down to the next kid, and the next kid, and the next kid, that was 4. But anyway, then they have only bought 1 shirt, 1 pair of pants, 1 whatever. Whereas if you say boys need to wear blue and have trucks on them and girls need to wear pink and purple and have flowers on them, then if your first child was a boy and your second's a girl, you have to go buy a whole new wardrobe. And so it's kind of something that our society has created. And somebody might be able to speak more to how gender is not the same necessarily all around the world, but here in the United States, it was in large part it was driven by consumerism.
A little bit of interesting stuff to go along with that. Yeah, it had a lot to do with consumerism, but World War II had a profound impact on that as well. So the idea of standardized sizing comes from World War II. And you know how it's always like, women's clothes is all so weirdly fitted. It's because, so for men, they came up with ratios that would work well for army uniforms. But it turns out women don't have ratios like that. So every just kind of brand came up with their own thing. That's not even really important, so you can cut it out, but it's just interesting. Other things that came from World War II are the idea that pink is a girl color. So it used to be associated with red, which was a masculine color. But Hitler used pink colors to represent men who had sex with men. And so that was put on a pink triangle that was upside down and put on their prison uniforms. Or before they were sent to... Before they were sent to concentration camps, it would just be something that they wore on their jackets, kind of like the Star of David. And so because of that, it was like, well, now we can't have our boys being gay, so they, I guess, gave pink to girls. But actually, like, it's very interesting to see how much of the commercialization of gender has to do with those 2 decades, really. And yet it's just kind of stuck, you know? And so we have this same sort of thing, even though, like, it wasn't really a thing until this small thing happened, but now it's become such a big monumental thing that people don't really want to change it. And it's something that, it's not necessarily like society forces us to do things. Sometimes it's just like when you're young, you see things, and the things you see, you emulate, and the things you emulate probably come from society, and oftentimes are very problematic, you know? And so it's just kind of interesting to see how much society's ideas of something can be imprinted on us when we're so young.
So talking about this too, like these ideas of where, you know, gender comes from and our ideas about it, you know, consumerism, and in the 20th century there's a lot of effects, but we know that these ideas of gender go back a lot further than that, right? In the Victorian era, there were very strict gender expectations of if you identify as female or if you identify as male, there are strict gender expectations. So what are some gender expectations? And we're talking about gender in the moment, about the binary, but it's important to recognize that gender is a spectrum, right? It's not just one or the other. It can be many different things in the middle. And so right now we are focusing on the stereotype of one or the other and how that influences our lack of recognition sometimes of a gender spectrum or how that influences the way that we interact. So what are some stereotypes that come out of this kind of pressure that's been happening for a while?
The biggest one I see in my personal life, and this goes back far in history, is I am an ag student, and that is not seen traditionally as a workforce that women have been or should be in. You know, back in the day, the men farmed and grew the crops, and the women raised the family and tended to the house and cooked the meals. And that's just not the truth anymore. At Montana State, there are more women in the ag department than there are men. And it has been that way for at least the past 7 years. So that's just a stereotype of, I guess, where I as a woman should have ended up in the future as a stay-at-home mom or outside of science in general. And that for men, maybe if their goal is to have a big family and raise kids and not work, that's a stereotype that could be pressed negatively against men in general as well.
Yeah, one of the biggest impacts that I personally see in my life is the idea that the feminine is lesser than the masculine. So that doesn't just mean like, oh, women are below men. No, it's more of like a higher value of masculinity over femininity. And so that can show up in lots of different ways. But I know that oftentimes when I was younger, and even to some extent now, I would force myself to not do what I felt was the right thing or not to do the thing which I most liked because it was too feminine, it was too girly, and being girly is bad. Being girly is the same as being oppressed for the past forever, you know? It was the same as being like just a negative idea that I had of the feminine. And so because of that, it's a lot of like strong masculinity, but it also goes both ways. So like my brother, who I mentioned before, has always just been more of a soft, caring person. And so there was a lot for him in our family of like, no, you can't just like be so nice. You have to stand up for yourself. And it wasn't usually said like man up, like you're such a girl. It wasn't like that. But there was a value of masculinity that was much higher than a value of femininity. And that's something that I think is really interesting to note and to be careful of in our world.
So I, being the sex educator at Richard Kerr, get the opportunity to present with Parent of the Help Center a fair amount, which is great because I've learned so much from them. Among other things, we get to do an activity with high schoolers where we ask them for what some of these gender stereotypes are. And they do apply, like we've already heard, to, you know, jobs, thinking that nurses should be female and doctors should be male, and hairdressers are female, and I mean, all those words that end in man, mailman, fireman, all these, you know, policeman. And of course, a lot of people are trying to change it to be like firefighter and even a fly fisher, for example, because not everybody who does those things is necessarily male. But it applies to jobs, it applies obviously to, as we've already talked about, the things that people wear, the way they cut their hair. It's funny that the kids come up with all kinds of things like emotions specifically. So, you know, males are, the only emotions we think they feel are anger and, well, I guess not anger. They're never really allowed to feel sadness, or, I mean, it's just kind of the stereotypes that we have of them. Whereas females are expected to be less stoic than males are and more, you know, super emotional. All females are emotional. That's just what it is. And when it comes to things like relationships, it can impact those as well. So gender stereotypes as they relate to relationships are that we expect, first of all, that everyone is heterosexual, but second of all, that a guy will ask a girl out, a girl will play hard to get, a guy is supposed to convince her, and it just kind of goes on and on that we're supposed, that females, we often hear, are supposed to be a lady in the streets but a freak in the sheets, and that guys are, you know, it made fun of if they are, you know, virgins and they're supposed to be players and go out there and just get themselves a lot of booty. And then we also ask, Alexina's laughing, but this is what we hear. I mean, and it's true. And then after we find out what these stereotypes are that the kids know and they can name them all day, we even ask, like, it's hilarious to be like, what do guys drink? And just the whole class shouts, beer, whiskey, and we're like, right, and what do women drink? And they're like, wine. And it's, you know, just the stereotypes of what we should, everything. Yes, absolutely. It's like no one drinks water. No, milk, absolutely not. Juice, not a thing, unless there's, you know, champagne in it. So
I mean, these gender stereotypes are through so many different parts of our life. And then we always ask the kids after they have listed them and put people into boxes. You know, we literally draw boxes on the board for what it means to be a man versus act like a lady. And then we ask them, what happens if somebody doesn't fit into those categories? And they talk about the fact that they call each other horrible names. And as Alexina was mentioning, you know, she said, we didn't tell my brother to man up. But that's the least of what gets said to them. And so much of what happens to boys is they get called girly names, or they get called, and by girly names I mean things that I'm not allowed to say on the radio that are very horrible terms to call someone that relate to female genitalia, for example. They also use a lot of negative terms about folks that are part of the queer community. That's often something you call somebody who's not fitting into their gender stereotype.
Or their sexual activity.
Yeah.
Oftentimes to discussions of, you know, language that's used to demean someone related to their sexual activity, and that's both for men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Or any gender, like the way that they describe that. Yeah. Are there any other stereotypes that stand out that feel like important to mention in this discussion of the way that we perceive gender, or the way that we perceive it as being one or the other versus a spectrum?
I would say not even specifically, but we could do an entire radio show just on what gender stereotypes are in the boxes we put people into. But it's something that, until pretty late in my life and in when I got to college, was something I didn't really think about. And the second I started thinking about gender and how I perceived other people and how I perceived myself, like, it's kind of hard to stop thinking about it. And just being so involved with Queer Straight Alliance and then being so involved in what is considered to be a male-dominated field, it's just something I can't escape personally, and I don't think we should. I think the only way we're going to maybe beat these stereotypes or change society's perception on them is to acknowledge that we have them now. So it's a challenge that I've been diving headfirst into the past couple of years, and I hope everyone has an opportunity to do so as well.
So to preface this, it might be helpful to note that I am, in fact, a lesbian, but you even find, specifically when it comes to relationships and dating, that even in same-sex couples, there's a lot of, like, gendered things. And it's bizarre. It'll be like, oh, who's the man in the relationship? And it's like, well, neither of us. That's, like, kind of the point. But, you know, beyond that, it's just even more, like, so I tend to come off as more femme. I wear lots of lipstick because it's amazing and I love it. Things like that. And it'll be like, oh, I'm gay. You're gay. How could you ever be gay? And then it'll be like, someone who dresses more masculine, and it's like, oh wow, I knew you were gay the moment I saw you. And it's like, not, it doesn't even really have to do with clothing, but it does influence the way that people, and you can find this especially, I would say, with men, perceive the way that someone is a lesbian or that someone is gay. So it'll almost be like, so someone who might identify as more butch oftentimes is like, oh, they're one of the bros. But then someone who is much more feminine, it's like, oh, she's a fake lesbian, or, you know, things like that. So that's something interesting to know, is that it's not just based around heterosexuality. Well, it kind of is, but it shows up pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, and that was actually going to be my next question, about how these gender stereotypes that tend to be pretty heteronormative, so focusing on male-female relationships and the way that we perceive binary gender, how that influences relationships that don't match that. That was going to be my next question, and how gender is influenced that way. So if a person identifies as gender nonconforming or identifies differently than maybe their genitalia or their sexual orientation doesn't match that heteronormative play, how that influences the relationships.
I have one more thing to say kind of on that note, is that sometimes there can be a strong sense of internalized but external focused homophobia or transphobia. You see this especially prevalent with trans women, which is, it's just kind of hard to talk about, and it's a really dangerous issue. But oftentimes, trans women who date men will get into a relationship, and this person they get into a relationship with knows that they are trans, but when other people find out about it, they react violently because they're seen as gay, or like, how can you have sex with a man? Which, they're not a man, like, stop. But That causes lots and lots and lots of problems. Like, you see, I don't know the exact statistic off the top of my head, but you are several times more likely to be murdered if you are a trans woman than if you are just a woman in the United States. And that's something that's really scary, and that's kind of one of the farther extents of what stereotypes and gender do. But it is something that's important to know, and sometimes can be a good point to start at and then work your way backward. Be like, okay, so this has to do with this and this and this. And then you see the more mild things in a much more impactful light.
And I know with me, in my experience with being gender nonconforming and using the they, them pronoun, I tend to get one of two reactions, like in relationships or when I start talking with people and I identify myself as being gender nonconforming. It's either confusion as to like, oh, what does that mean? I have no idea. Or they just then make ongoing assumptions about who you are, or what you do, or what types of relationships you're in, what types you're not, those kinds of things. And so when it comes to stereotypes, it feels like some of those very binary stereotypes continue to influence in that way because people have such a history with them, right? We've all grown up with these gender stereotypes. They've influenced so much of our lives to a certain point that when people ask them to say like, hey, that stereotype, I don't buy into that, I'm not that, that it creates confusion, at least in my experience. So I don't know if in any other's experience.
And I can't necessarily speak from personal experience, but I will say that I know and I understand that gender, a person feeling like they need to conform to, I guess, any group, but especially gender, since that's what we're talking about, can be very difficult. So, I mean, we were talking about the fact that men and boys can feel very, like, the way to get them to act how we expect them to act is to call them girl names or call them names that, you know, allude to the fact that they may not be straight. And so it can be difficult, right? So it's gender is something that doesn't just hurt women or just hurt people who are gender nonconforming. It hurts everybody in our society because as we do the boxes with these students, we say, does anybody fit into this box exactly? And the answer is always no. And if somebody does fit most of the things in the man box and they identify as a man, that's great. I mean, it's totally fine to be those stereotypes that we expect of people, but it's not okay for people to feel like they have to fit into them. But I think the need to conform, or I guess the pressure to conform, I think, is definitely higher for folks that are gender nonconforming or transgender or somewhere else on that spectrum.
In one of the best movies of all time, in my opinion, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, there's a scene where two of the main characters, Esmeralda and the dude, not Quasimodo, the other one.
Phoebus.
Yeah, and Phoebus. Sorry, I don't really care about him, are, like, having, like, a fight in this church or whatever, and Phoebus tells Esmeralda, funny, you fight almost as well as a man, and she's like, I was about to say the same thing about you, and it's, like, funny, but also it's supposed to, like, show, like, oh, she's, like, a good fighter, but at the same time, it's, like, she uses the idea that fighting like a man is above something, like, fighting like a man means that you're not fighting like a girl, which she is, so it's like something above. And then she calls him an insult by saying that he doesn't exactly fight like a man. And it's even subtler things like that, where you compliment someone by using something so gendered, that can actually be really interesting to note, if not dangerous.
Well, if we wanted to talk about kids' movie and gender, like that could be a whole other radio show, talking about kids' movies and gender. So.
I definitely agree about kids' movies and gender. That's very real. And I think from the parenting perspective, which is a perspective I can definitely speak from, it's really hard. It's just hard because I have a daughter. And I say I have a daughter. I don't know. She's 2.5. But she does like herself some tutus. And it's kind of funny because I'm like, oh, don't wear tutus. That's too girly. And I refuse to let her watch princess movies. That is not going to happen. And it's funny because I don't want to say I've trained my partner well enough. He's male. But I've had enough conversations with him that he was watching something with her the other day, a new cartoon that neither of us had seen before. And I said, how is it? And he's like, well, you know, the gender stereotypes are a little bit much, but at least the girls in the show are able to save themselves and they don't need the boys to come do it for them. And I was like, I love that I have like taught you enough to look out for those things, because it wasn't something that he was really aware of before. And nothing, to be honest, that I was that aware of, even just a couple of years ago when I first started here at Bridger Care. I was like, gender, I don't know, it's the genitals you're born with. And like, no, that's sex assigned at birth. Completely different. So yeah, kids' movies, but it's hard as a parent because even when you're thinking, okay, I don't want to put my kid into a gender box, you sometimes can feel like you're going too far the other side. And so I, by not letting her watch princess movies, am I forcing her to not be feminine, or trying to, I guess I should say. It was interesting that I was talking to somebody else who's doing similar things with their daughter, and I said something about mine, or I guess daughters, I think they have twins, and I said something about mine liking to play with dolls, and she was like, well, I don't want to make my girls think that they just need to care for other people. And I was like, but dolls are good for any gender of any child because they teach us how to take care of other people. And so it's kind of hard to let our kids, to expose them to everything from things that are super crazy gendered on one side to super crazy gendered on the other. Because I'm not going to lie, I'm also probably not going to let my daughter watch things that are like very violent when she's five, because I'm going to think, well, no. Because we're gentle in our family. But it's hard to strike a balance.
So we've had this discussion of, you know, gender and how we ourselves have experienced our gender and how society or how things have influenced our ideas about gender, and this piece on parenting, which is really important because it can be that space of, you know, as a parent, I want to support my child and who they are and what they do, but with a 2.5-year-old, you know, language expression isn't that high, and so it can be a struggle.
Don't tell her that. She would argue with you. She's a very verbal 2.5-year-old.
How would she argue?
That's a good question. But she would probably say something. I don't know. I'm trying to think, because she's a very verbal 2-year-old. We have long conversations, and I'm like, you should not be able to say all those things. But yes.
So we've been talking about gender and where we've learned about gender, and I'm wondering if we can discuss this idea of gender, but how can it influence or affect the way that we seek support? So seeking medical support, seeking maybe counseling services, seeking even things like a job or education or relationships. So could a person's gender identity or the way that the world perceives someone's gender influence the way that they seek those things?
Absolutely. So Bridger Care has worked with part of the LGBTQ community and medical community for about a year, and we created a training for healthcare providers about how things like sexual orientation and gender can affect a person's health specifically. And so some of the things that come out of that is the fact that, like, you know, some people might be like, I'm a man and I have a uterus and I don't think my doctor knows that about me, right? Like, doctors need to be asking the questions so they can be giving good care. And it's not one of those things where if a person has a broken arm, you need to know what their genitals look like. But it is important if they're having, like, pain in their belly, like, do they have a uterus? And I don't get to just assume based on who's sitting in front of me. And we do know that 1 in 5 transgender folks has been denied healthcare by a physician. And that's just not acceptable. When a person is treated poorly in a clinical setting, for example, they're unlikely to go back unless it's ever like a life or death situation. And additionally, some people who maybe haven't been denied healthcare may have received such poor treatment in one of those settings that they don't want to return. And so it can definitely affect their physical health. It can affect their mental health. We do see higher rates of suicide, as I know you know, Perrin, working for the Help Center, among the transgender community. And it's not necessarily that a person who is transgender automatically has some mental health issues. It's more about the internalized oppression that they might experience and how they have been moving through the world and how people have been treating them and how that kind of plays out in their emotions and in their minds. So what we do see is, I know a study recently came out of Canada looking at teenagers who identified as transgender or gender nonconforming, and they found that of those teenagers that had parental support and had good support systems in place, they actually had lower suicide rates than their cisgender peers. And so it's not, it is something that we can kind of make sure is in place for not just for youth but for adults as well, because all people deserve to be viewed and accepted for who they are. And other things in healthcare I think that are important to note are the fact that most medical research has been done for white males specifically. So like when we think about heart attacks,
we know the symptoms of a heart attack, we think, but really we know the symptoms of a heart attack for a man. And women's healthcare often isn't even talked about at all. So it's interesting that I was looking at a study recently done with men, and it was just men in general. It wasn't necessarily straight men, but they asked, do you think that birth control has ever had any effect on your life? And these were, I should clarify, these were sexually active men, so these weren't just people who'd never had sex before. But 60% of them said they didn't feel like birth control had ever been something that had impacted their lives in any way. And it's just one of those things that is not talked about. Women's health is not always viewed as that important when we are half of the population. What about in school, Alexina? Do you anecdotally or... know in general if gender can impact a person in school in any way?
I mean, yeah, the answer is yeah, gender impacts school. It starts and it changes over time. But early on, it's like, all right, we're gonna split the class up into two groups. What's the ideal group that's like already there and seems easy? Gender. But it's not really gender, it's how someone appears, so whatever. But you know, so it just starts there, and it's like, girls versus boys, kickball, you know, or who knows. My teacher voice is a 2-year-old voice, so. But it changes over time. Then it becomes like, all right, this subject is a girl's subject, this subject is a boy's subject. So there's like the soft sciences and the hard sciences. Do you say soft sciences?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a thing.
Okay, yeah, but it's like, honestly, if you look at it, oftentimes it has a lot to do with the gender divide in the field, you know, or things like that. And it's just like, okay, so the girls can like the soft sciences and the boys can like the hard sciences, you know, and then it's like English or whatever, let's say. Oh, boys are good at it, girls are good at it. Girls are good at it because it can be emotional. It has to do with stories, you know.
And I know with schools and if a person is... identifies different maybe than their assignment at birth, and there are maybe conflicts within the family or within the school setting, if a person doesn't feel safe where they're at, it's going to affect the way that they perform in school, at their jobs, the way that they interact with their friends, right? If they're constantly wondering if someone is going to judge them or say something derogatory to them or hurt them, maybe physically, the way that we interact with peers, the way that we interact with other employees, or the way that we interact with teachers and as we're learning subjects, all of that will be influenced.
Absolutely, and I think one thing to point out, as a lot of people know, about every other year here in the state of Montana and across the nation, they do something with high school students called the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, and they ask them all kinds of questions like, did you wear a seatbelt the last time you were in a car? Have you ever tried heroin? Have you ever had sex? A few years ago, many states started asking, do you identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, and or transgender, in order to try to tease out some of these effects of being part of the transgender community on students, and what effect that might have. And Montana is not doing that, though I have heard the next time they do the survey they are going to ask, which seems like it's moving in the right direction. But what we do know is during the 2017 Youth Risk Behavior Survey, they asked high school students if they had been the victim of teasing or name-calling because someone thought they were gay, lesbian, or bisexual, and transgender is not even one of those things. But altogether, about 10.5% of students said they had been the victim of that. And when we look nationwide across at the states that are asking, do you belong to part of this community, we see higher rates of students missing school who are part of the LGBTQ community, in part because they feel unsafe or because they have been threatened or because people are teasing them or calling them names.
Yeah, there's also a correlation between issues related to mental health and the LGBT community, not to say like, oh, it's a mental illness. No, it's more like the societal pressures and stuff like that, especially in an area which is high society, not the way you say that, but there's a high level of social interaction and society at school, and oftentimes it can just be like easier not to go to school. So it's not just like teasing and stuff like that. Sometimes it's just like feeling uncomfortable, and that can cause people to miss more school, which is just not great. In seventh grade, I don't know the website or the statistics off the top of my head, but in seventh grade, we were shown this thing where it was like, this is your chance of graduating based off of how many days of school you miss. And it was like, after 10, it was like half as much as if it was like below 10, and it was like really crazy, you know. And so sometimes I think it can just be easy to be like, oh, whatever, it's attendance. But like, it can actually be something really important to note is actually getting students into school.
With this conversation of gender, we're coming kind of to the end of our hour, and I'm wondering, what are those kind of important things about gender that would feel important for us, each other, to know, maybe to give us an opportunity to educate each other, or for listeners to know?
So what I will say is gender can be fluid. You don't have to have it figured out now. You don't have to have it figured out ever, really. I just encourage people to express themselves how they want to and know that however you're feeling inside about your gender, or if you're confused about it, it's valid and it's an experience that is worth looking into. And to just be really conscious of how you treat other people and how, like, just looking back on how much my perception of gender has changed over the last couple of years, like, I would have been so confused on what gender nonconforming and non-binary folks were 3 years ago before I got to college, and now it's something I strive so hard to work on in my life. So just knowing that, like, there's always room to grow and learn from other people's experiences, but to really draw on your own so you can have a sense of understanding.
I think it's important to note that oftentimes one of the best ways to explore, to figure out who you are and what you like to do, is to kind of have fun, to find what makes you happy. Like, lipstick makes me happy, blazers make me happy, playing soccer badly makes me happy, you know? And it's not even about like, oh, this is a girl thing, this is a boy thing, and I'm trying to balance it out. No, it's just, I just like it. It's fun, you know? And that's something that's kind of fun to just, I'm using fun a lot. Something that's just nice to be able to just do what you like, completely separate of other things. And sometimes that's the easiest way to sum up a gender discussion. It's just like, it makes life happier to be who you are, you know? And that's kind of all you can ask for, really.
I guess I have a couple of things that I think would be important. First of all, not assuming, but asking. So very recently, I had an experience where I had been calling someone by the wrong pronoun for a very long time, and I found out what their pronouns are, and they were not what I expected them to be. And I guess I had made the assumption, which is something that you shouldn't necessarily do. But we do all mess up, right? Like, it's a learning curve, and it is something that we just have to keep trying harder, because people do deserve to feel respected and who they are. And so that's part of the reason that pronouns come in is super important, is because the fact that if we are willing to try to put in the work to use the correct pronouns for someone, it also shows to them that we respect who they are as a person, at least that piece of their identity. And again, that's just one piece of many of their identities. And I feel like before we had this conversation, Coley, you also had mentioned something about using pronouns in conversations that I think is worth adding on.
Yeah, so the biggest thing I have noticed, especially in the queer community, is if someone is unclear about what someone else's pronouns are, they just avoid using pronouns altogether. And they just use a person's name to the point where it feels uncomfortable in conversation, and it doesn't flow. And I think the best way to combat this, and it's a question I get a lot actually, is just how to acknowledge someone's pronouns when you don't know. And I've found it to be almost always appropriate just to ask and say, what are your preferred pronouns? Or I generally try not to assume and ask like, oh, your pronouns are he, him, but inviting either introducing myself first. I like to say, I'm Coley, my pronouns are she, her, and that is inviting the person you've just met to also share their pronouns in a way where they will feel like safe and valid to do so. But just little things like asking people what their pronouns are. I always include them in my email signatures. If I'm at any kind of networking event, I put them on my name tag. But to know that my pronouns are very in line with how my gender is perceived, so it's something I don't personally have to worry about, but just validating that for other people, it's not that simple. So to just know that their experience is different and to make someone else's harder experience easier on them through the actions of yourself.
And on that note, when a person does mess up, apologizing obviously is something that is important to do, but not making it like long and drawn out so that they have to
comfort you for screwing something up that they've probably had to do many times in their life, but just being like, I'm going to get it right next time. So that's always a good thing to know. And one other thing I think is worth adding on there is not putting gender on to others. So definitely, like I mentioned, with little kids, they might be experimenting. And so when teaching, you know, a kindergarten class recently, this little kid was like, I love My Little Ponies. And I was this little child who appeared to be a boy said, I love My Little Ponies. That does not mean that this child is currently identifies or will at any point identify as transgender. He may be a little boy that likes ponies. And so it's not one of those things that even if you see, you know, a woman with short hair who hates to wear whatever and always, I guess, who hates to wear makeup and is always wearing pants, that doesn't mean you can necessarily be like, oh, are you transgender? Like, no, people should just be able to express themselves however they want to. And they don't necessarily, you don't need to know someone's gender except to use their pronouns correctly in most cases.
So thank you everyone for joining us for this discussion on gender. It's been so nice talking with you all. So thank you very much. You've been listening to KGVM 95.9.